Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by P4P Muscle Productions and Entertainment, the number one drug-free athlete sponsorship foundation in the world. Following under the teachings, don't trust me, trust my hustle. The ringleader of this show and conductor of this machine is Kaylin, lend me your ear, Patterson. Sit back, relax, and turn up your volume to P4P Real Talk.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're all doing fabulous this evening. In case you've noticed, this obviously isn't Kaylin Patterson. My name is Desiree Fletcher, and I'm filling in for Kaylin tonight. He couldn't be with us, but he wishes you all well, and he's looking forward to chatting with you all the next time around. This program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship in the world. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now, let's talk. I'm very excited this evening. We have two very talented people that are going to be on our show. We're going to be starting with Ryan Irwin, who's based in Des Moines, Iowa. Ryan is a promoter of two shows in the Midwest here, and the topic that we're going to be taking a look at tonight is kind of how you go from being a competitor to running your own show and encouraging other competitors. So with that, I'd like to welcome you, Ryan, to the show.
Thank you, Desiree. It's a pleasure being here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm glad to have you tonight. So, Ryan, you are with the, to start with, the NANBF Federation. Can you tell us just a little bit about that for our listeners that might not know the difference between all of the different federations that are out there?
Yeah, certainly. So I think the first thing to mention is that the NANBF, or the North American Natural Bodybuilding Federation, it is a natural federation. It's drug tested. We've been around since the early 90s, so we're one of the largest federations that are drug-free. We've got competitions across the nation. We are also affiliated with our pro federation, which is the IFPA, and they hold professional drug-free competitions across the nation.
Okay, awesome. And if anyone out there would like to find out where the different competitions are being held, where can they go to learn that?
So there's a lot of different ways you could find that. You could, of course, go to the NANBF website, and that's nanbf.org. And there's also not only the contest schedule, but a lot of resources, what's on the banned substance list, poses, requirements, things of that nature. You can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for NANBF, and you can find us there. We're off on Instagram as well, NANBF there.
Okay, awesome. So the key acronym being NANBF, and you can find out all that you need to know. So you've been competing for a little bit. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on how you got started in this whole business?
Yeah, certainly. So I guess you could say I've been around the sport for a while. I started competing in 1993, so I think if my math's right, that's about 22 years ago.
And
yes, it is. Yeah. it's been a while. It's hard to believe that. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but I started when I was a teenager, and I was the proverbial 95-pound weakling. And just started to get into bodybuilding because I thought it was neat to see what the body was capable of. And I talked to a friend. I asked him, what do you have to do? And he said, you just have to be consistent and dedicated. I said, well, I can do that. So, I started competing. And, I've competed, I don't even know how many competitions, probably 30, because I've usually done one or two contests a year. Long story short, 2009, I won my pro card, and that was took me 17 years to do that. I certainly
Wow.
I wasn't one of those genetically blessed individuals, but I tell you what, it sure did feel good to finally get that that pro card after all those years. So
I bet it did. How did you keep yourself motivated over 17 years to stick with it and keep after it?
You know, I think the biggest thing is you know, looking at the improvements over time. I've got pictures over the years, and you see changes. You know, you also get feedback, and now back then. I'm making myself feel old here, but back then there wasn't social media. So, I mean, your basic outlet there was go to the competition. So I'd go to contests, meet people, get to know people, people I competed against. And it really kind of became an extended family. So it was fun as well. You know, of course, now you've got social media and that just, you take that and you just amplify it. And you've got people all over the world that you can do the same thing. And it just keeps you motivated. The bottom line is just, it was neat to see the changes. And I get some sort of an odd satisfaction out of just knowing how hard I can push myself compared to the average person.
Well, and I think a lot of people in this sport can definitely relate to that because a lot of times you are competing against yourself more so than anyone else that's ever going to get on the stage with you.
Absolutely.
So 17 years, you got your pro card, and then what happens after that?
Well, you know, I've competed as a pro, I think, 5 or 6 times. My best place, and I took 6th place down in St. Louis a couple years ago, and I've competed in California, and, you know, I enjoy it. You know, again, going back to I'm not the biggest guy, I'm not the most proportioned guy, but just going up against those caliber of competitors. I mean, it's amazing to see what people have done with their physiques, and just to stand up on stage in the same level of those competitors is an awesome experience. So, you know, I've recently started to compete in powerlifting. It's something that I've always believed a stronger muscle is a bigger muscle. So I've always enjoyed lifting heavy. So since I achieved my goal of getting my pro status, I started competing in powerlifting, done pretty well with that as well. Done some big competitions, and I've got some national records, and, you know, right now I'm still got bodybuilding, you know, in my blood, and, I still powerlift with a bodybuilding flavor, but just kind of pushing that side of things right now and, seeing what I can do there.
Okay, awesome. Now, you've enjoyed, I would say, quite a bit of success with your bodybuilding career. At what point did you think that you wanted to be on the other end of this equation and you wanted to start running your own show?
Well, I was really fortunate. I mean, again, competing here in Iowa for many years, Scott Dickerson, he is one of the founders of the NANBF. Which was started by Jim Evans. And Scott actually, as a college student, I'd sent him some letters and just given him some feedback and some ideas I thought he might be able to utilize from a competitor's perspective to improve the contest. And, you know, he saw that, and he thought they were some good ideas. So he asked me over. It was the night before a contest. I thought I was just going to hand deliver my entry fee, and he said, "Hey, Ryan, have you ever thought about doing this?" And I said, "No." And so he started taking me under his wing. And for about 3 years or so, I was very fortunate to be under his tutelage and showed me how to run a competition and the ins and outs. And that was, oh, man, I think that was back in early 2000s, 2000 to 2003. So I kind of worked under his guidance, and then finally, you know, he let me go, and I started running contests.
All right, and what, I mean, just to say, just to start running, you just started running a contest, I think is almost a little bit of an understatement. I mean, what went into getting started and getting out there and letting people know? And, I mean, what steps did you have to take to say, okay, I am a full-fledged promoter? I mean, is there any licensing that's necessary, or you just need to have a venue and a passion and a communication outlet and you're good to go? How does that work?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So there's a lot of different ways to begin promoting. I think first and foremost, you have to be a competitor. You have to be in, I shouldn't say a competitor, but you have to be in the sport, in the industry, because I think that to run a successful contest, you need to know and think like a competitor does and go after from their viewpoint. I mean, ultimately, they're the customer, if you will, and so you want to make it a good experience for them. And, you know, and then from there, you just need to, you have to have a very good organizational skill. You have to have a good planning skill. It's just like any business. You have to market, you know, you have finances you have to focus on. There's just a lot of things that go into it. I was fortunate of having somebody work. I was fortunate to work under somebody, and I think that that's a real good model. In fact, that's what we do with the NANBF is when somebody comes on that wants to promote and they've got, you know, what looks like to be the skills needed, you know, we'll usually have somebody mentor them, keep them under their wing, and give them guidance. So then that way they're set up for success. Certainly each year it does somewhat get easier, but that first year is definitely the hardest. You're starting fresh, you're creating things, you're making contacts, you're starting to develop your reputation, and it takes a while to establish a good, solid competition.
And what would you say would be the criteria for a good competition? I mean, you've been on both sides of the equation. You've been a competitor, you've competed in many states, amateur and pro, and now you run your own show. What do you think are the elements that make a strong competition?
So I always say that first and foremost, I want it to be a good experience for the competitors. I also want it to be fair. I mean, I do run drug tested competitions, so drug tests, make sure things are fair and legit. And then lastly, I want it to be a good show. I want it to be an experience. I want it to be with the audience to enjoy watching it. I think probably one of the biggest things is to be organized. You know, you've got competitors have dieted and trained for months or even longer. And so you want that experience to be top level. So then that way, when they come in, they know what to expect. There's no surprises. They just focus on what they need to focus on. And then they go out there and show what they've worked so hard to achieve.
Exactly. And, you know, for our listeners out there who may never have been behind the scenes at a show, I mean, there's a lot that goes on because in the meantime, you are getting people who are registered. Then you're getting them set up for their polygraphs. And then you're also having contracted with tanning vendors and makeup artists. And you have to find the right venue that's willing to let you bring in this type of a program. Because, you know, I've been in these competitions, and the number one sign that's all over everywhere is if you are not behind stage, you have to keep your clothes on because we can't stay in the chairs. We can't, you know, stay in this, stay in that. I mean, what are some of the most difficult parts? I mean, you have to be organized, but is there any part of this whole process that is harder than others?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing is is the variables that you don't expect. I mean, the working with the competitors, that's kind of your, I'm not going to say you're unknown because, you know what they're there for. They're there to compete, but you've got a lot of individual factors. You know, you've got people that, you know, for my contest, I've had people travel from all over the nation. So, you know, you've got to do your best to accommodate the travel. You know, you've got to have enough hotels. The day of the event, you got to keep a schedule. You know, you got to make sure that everything's on track. You got to make sure that the competitors show up for the competition or the drug testing. It's all about managing them, honestly, and just making sure that everything goes right for them.
And that's great. I mean, even down to the posing and what poses are acceptable and which aren't. And I have to say that, Ryan, you do a pretty mean bikini cock one hip to the side pose and back pose. You got that down pretty tight.
I'm missing the hair flip. I'm missing the hair, but I appreciate the feedback.
There you go. So now you actually run, you coordinate two shows. One of them is a pro qualifier, and one of them is kind of like a, I guess I'll call it a warm-up, for lack of a better description. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the difference of those two?
Certainly, certainly. So to start with Cedar Rapids, Cedar Rapids is the one that's in the fall. It's, like you mentioned, it's kind of a smaller competition. Cedar Rapids, it's a smaller town, smaller community in the middle of the state. And, you know, it's not a big venue. And it's a good competition for competitors who, like you said, this is either their first contest or maybe they've got the rider set on a pro qualifier. And this is an absolute blast because it's a smaller, more intimate competition. You know, you can get to relax a little bit more and kind of get to know the competitors and just go out and have fun. I mean, certainly it's a professional contest. I mean, things are still, they're not loosey-goosey, but you just don't have the intensity that you do when you've got like 12 people in a class or 100 plus competitors in the contest. You can kind of relax a little bit more. And it's fun. I mean, you know, it's a good one. And a lot of people go on the pro qualifying contest after that. You know, the one in Des Moines, the Natural Isle, it's been going on now. We'll have its 22nd year next year. And it's a big contest. It's a pro qualifier. You know, you're going to have usually 10 to 12 people in the class. It's going to be an all-day event. It's going to be tough competition, you know, I mean, especially the open classes. You're going to have people coming in from all around the nation to compete for that IFPA Pro card. But there's, you know, it shouldn't be a place that people are afraid to start with. If timing's there, there is certainly beginner classes, there's novice classes. It's just a bigger contest.
Got it. And what was it that you were seeing at your NutriSport competition that prompted you to want to start your show that you host in Cedar Rapids?
So Cedar Rapids actually was going on a long time ago. It was actually even before I was a promoter. It's gone through a couple hands. I think it was called the something like the Hawkeye Classic or something like that. And being a Cyclone, I'm glad that name's not there anymore. But it's been there for a while, and it's just kind of evolved to what it is today. So, and you've got that. I mean, you've got there's competitions around that are just smaller, and that's great. And then you've got some that are usually in the bigger cities. Those are going to be your larger shows.
Okay, well, I appreciate that clarification because I did not have the history on that show. You know, my first show that I jumped into was actually your show, the NutriSport show, as a pro qualifier, and had no real clue as to what I was doing, but was very blessed to actually place in the top five a couple of times. But so having that opportunity for, you know, shows like the one in Cedar Rapids, I think is great, great learning experience, a great opportunity to get feedback from judges, go ahead and tweak and fine-tune before you head to your next show. So those opportunities are outstanding. What do you see that promoters are going to need to do or have the responsibility to do to continue to see growth in the sport? And what kind of growth are you seeing in the sport?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, certainly things have changed over the years. I mean, back when I first started competing, really all there was consisted, it was bodybuilding. I mean, that was it. Of course, now you've got figure and then, you know, bikinis there. You've got men's physique is there. Now you've got women's physique. So, I mean, the sport, it continually changes. And again, going back to the customer, which is the competitors, it's based on what they want, you know. There might be aspects of it that certain people don't enjoy, but I mean, it gets more people involved in the contest and the sport. So I think that's a good and healthy thing. You know, one of the things that we did last year for the first time was we did a what I call a continuous format where there's no big long break between prejudging and finals. We grouped the categories together, so all the bodybuilders came out and did all the mandatories, all the prejudging, and then we went right into the awards. The big change, instead of being there all day long, you're there for a 3 to 4 hour period, and then you're done. And it went over tremendous. It was very well received by both competitors and spectators. It made it for a little bit more fun, I think, for a lot of them. It was a lot of work, but it went off well. So we'll continue to do that. And I think that's a perfect example of, again, just doing what's better for the competitors.
I wholeheartedly agree with that change. I do like the continuous flow format. Has there been, aside from that and the time factor of not having it be a show that takes the whole day from 7 a.m. to midnight, because I've been in those shows too, are there other areas that you're getting a lot of feedback on that competitors are looking for or to be changed or to be added or anything along those lines?
Yeah, you know, I think a couple things. One is posing. You know, you're starting to see some federations and promoters that are kind of saying, all right, the posing routine is optional or the T-walk is optional. And they do that for a couple reasons. One, they do it to speed the contest up. I mean, it takes time to get out there and do your minute routine or your T-walk. And so that's one reason. And then I think the second reason is, you know, it's not something that's judged usually, so it's I think to some competitors they don't see the value of it. Now myself, again, I'm old school, and I personally think that that's a big part of the sport. You know, a little bit on a soapbox here, but back in the day, that was the big ritual, the big finale. It's like, let's see the posing routine. Let's see how this person can position their body and present themselves. And, you know, it's a skill. I mean, I don't think it's a dance. I've heard some people compare it to a dance, and that's not it at all. I mean, you've got examples of many, many different posing styles. You know, you've got the Frank Zanes, the dramatic posers. You've got the Tom Platz is just big mass here in your face. You know, you've got the Austrian Oak Schwarzenegger type. So you've got different types. You got to find your own style. And I think that even figure and bikini competitors, I mean, it's as a judge, I judged a lot of contests too. It's enjoyable to be out there and see somebody who's comfortable and knows how to show their physique. They might be terrified underneath it, but you have no idea. And I think that that's an element that I hope not, but I think it's being lost and misguided. So that's one thing you're starting to hear about. And then I think the other thing is just legitimate drug testing, consistency there, making sure that the standards are followed and upheld. I think that those are probably two of the trends that you're seeing right now.
Okay, very good. And I know as part of that too, is just consistency also in the overall judging. Is how hard is it to find judges? Is the pool still pretty decent, or are they starting to become fewer and far in between?
So what we've found is, or my opinion is, we've still got plenty of judges, but you have a lot more consistency. You know, I think it's because since there's so many different categories, it's tougher to judge. You know, you before, when it was just straight bodybuilding, it was pretty easy, honestly. But now you've got the different categories, and with that, different body types, and so it is. It's more of a challenge to judge than it used to be. And so the judges that we have, you know, you're going to find them judging more often because they have to continue to stay active. But also, as a newcomer, it's a lot harder to get into judging than it used to be. So I think you see a lot of people that are a little apprehensive of getting in there because of that challenge.
What are some of the criteria to become a judge?
So in the NANBF, I think that we do a very good job of picking and choosing our judges and training them. To become a judge, you have to test judge. And in when you test judge, you have to score 90% or better of the actual judging panel. So, and then that's to get, that's enables you to be a judge. And then once you are a judge, then you have to judge at a minimum of at least one competition per year to stay active. So there's oftentimes, I mean, you have people that try and they don't make it, and, you know, then they can certainly try again. And it's one of those things where, you know, I've seen it, and I think a lot of people have, where people will pull people from the audience or their gym buddies, and that's just not how, it's just not how it's supposed to be done. So we take it very seriously.
Definitely not. And the competitors take it very seriously, and their fans take it very seriously. So definitely something that, you know, I'm glad there's such a rigorous process in place. Well, Ryan, I know you only had limited time with us today, and I thank you so much for sharing all your insights on, you know, what it is like on the other side of a fence to be a promoter and, you know, just kind of what it takes to run a good show. So before you go, are there any last-minute thoughts that you want to share with our group?
You know, I just, I'd encourage you to support everybody, to support the sport. Go out, watch contests, cheer on your friends, support drug-free natural bodybuilding and continue to push that. I'd also just invite everybody to come to the two events. I mean, Cedar Rapids is coming up October 25th, and then the Natural Iowa held in Des Moines, that is going to be next year on May 14th. You can find more information on both of those at naturaliowamuscle.com. Of course, you can also find those on the NANBF website, nanbf.org.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Ryan, and we'll be watching for you. We'll be looking for your shows here pretty soon.
Desiree, I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
No problem. Have a good night.
You too.
All right, and with that, I'm hoping that I have our next guest on the line, who is Mr. Jason Kyman. Jason, are you with us?
Yeah, I am.
All right, awesome. Thanks so much for hanging out and joining us tonight on the P4P. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Can't complain.
All right, awesome. So, Jason, you've been in this industry for quite a while. You've been a competitor, and now you're on the promoting side. And we want to hear more about your show and your experience and how you got started in this whole gig. But before we get that far, you are with the NGA, and I would love it if you could give us a little insight as to or into the NGA Federation and maybe how it differs from some of the other federations, or just to give our listeners an idea of, you know, if they're competing NGA, this is what it is, or if they're competing NANBF, this is how NGA differs, or, you know, just give us some insights along those lines.
Sure. The NGA is very similar to all the other federations, or not federation, sanctions, I guess. But there's one that we're really that different from. I mean, everybody has, you know, the PNBA has their own kind of little list of rules of what's, you know, what they do, and the DFAT kind of does their own little thing of what they do. You know, everybody has some little spun-offs and some overrides, so to speak. But for the most part, everybody kind of follows and adheres to about the same set of guidelines. About the only thing that's any different anywhere is the NANBF. As far as I know, they're the only ones that do it. Like as far as bodybuilding goes, they separate their categories by height, and the NGA and everybody else does it by weight classes. So other than that, judging criteria is pretty much the same. Categories, opportunities for people to compete in multiple categories is pretty much the same. But, you know, in like the bodybuilding world, for NGA, we separate by weight classes, you know, lightweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight. And the NBA, NAM best does it by, you know, like short, tall, medium, tall, tall. So it's probably for the most part when you, you know, if you look at crossovers of those classes, you don't get a lot of different competitors, but where, you know, in one sanction they would be in a tall class, and another sanction they would be in a different kind of class. But, you know, it's just the way they choose to do it. I actually prefer, personally, I've competed in both, and I actually prefer the weight classes because I'd rather compete against people my own weight than people my height, because, you know, at height, your weight can really vary. I mean, you could get someone sure. that's, you know, like me, sure. 6 foot tall. You know, I step on stage at about 198, and you could get another guy that's 6 foot tall, steps on stage at 172, you know, and there's a pretty substantial difference between us, you know, so, but, you know, other than that, it's pretty much the same, you know, everybody kind of tries to keep the sport as consistent as possible, and, you know, it's better for the sport. I mean, me personally, I wish there were less sanctions, and I wish it was more of a uniform sport, kind of like the NPC is on the non-natural side, where it's just kind of one deal and everybody kind of goes to the same place. But that's, unfortunately, I'm going to say in that.
Hey, no, that's no problem. Everybody has a vision of, you know, how they would like to see things operate. So you have been competing. How long have you been a competitor?
First time I ever competed was 1995.
Okay, very good.
So I competed, started in 1995, third in the very first show I ever competed. The bug kind of bit me. So I started competing pretty religiously. Then I competed from 95 to 99. Then went into a kind of a semi-retirement, you know, and back then when I was competing, there was no such thing as, you know, earning your pro card and stuff like that. People just competed to compete. You know, that's what it was about. And, you know, there was no pro level. There was no anything like that. It was just people just competed to compete. You know, there was nowhere to go after that. You just competed. Just for the love of it. And then, I kind of semi-retired, and my last show was in 99. And my first son, my oldest son, was born in 2000. He's 15 now. And so I kind of put everything on the back burner to be a dad. And then I thought about maybe coming back. And then in 2003, my second son was born. And so I stayed out for a while. So I ended up retiring from 2000 until 2006. And I came back in 2006. And because the reason I came back is because you just had Ryan Irwin on. And in 1998, 1999, I got second at the Mr. Iowa two straight years. And that kind of ate away at me for 6 years. And so I was like, man, I'm going to go back. I just want to win that show. And so I came back in 2006. And then also when I came back in 2006, that's when the pro card stuff started. And not that I really thought I'd ever turn pro, but I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of cool that there's now, you know, a vision of the next level or next step. And so 2006, took second in that show again. And then I was just like, oh, geez, what the heck do I have to do to win this thing? And so I trained a little harder, then ended up winning it in 2007 and ended up turning pro. I turned pro in 2009. And I've just been competing as a pro ever since then. So I won the HOA Classic as a pro twice, fourth twice at the Pro Universe in Miami. So I've had a pretty good career. Been a long career. You know, I've been doing it a long time, 20 years. So.
Yeah, but I think, you know, a lot of the most successful athletes, they are doing it for a long time. It's not a flash in the pan. It's consistency over time and just upping your game each time that you get up on the stage. So between retiring, coming out of retiring, where in there did the light bulb come on that you wanted to promote a show?
Well, that was about 5 years ago. I think that's when I started the Titan Classic. I'm 45, so, you know, I just turned 40, and I kind of thought to myself, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to compete, and, you know, I'm still competing, but you know, I'm not going to do this forever. And I, you know, I really love this sport, and I love what it's done, and I love what it promotes and what it stands for. And so I just thought, I always thought in the back of my mind, you know, Des Moines is a pretty big city to only have one show, you know, per year. I always thought, this is an awful big city, and there's a ton of competitors here, and, you know, hopefully there's room for another one. So I just kind of got into it, started investigating it, called a lot of the sanctions, and talked to the presidents of the, you know, the WNBF, the PNBA, and DFAC wasn't formed then. They didn't exist, but in the NGA, and just thought, you know, who do I want to work with, and who do I think has the same kind of values and stuff that I'm looking for. So I ended up going with the NGA and started promoting that show in 2010 was the first year, because this was just our fifth year. So 2010 was the first year.
All right, awesome. And I've actually competed in your show. You run a good show. And I would say, you know, our topic for tonight is just kind of giving our listeners an idea of, you know, if, you know, and of several of our competitors, if you do want to take it to the next stage and you've kind of toyed with, you know, hosting your own show, I mean, what goes into it, and you know, should you or shouldn't you actually host your own show? Because, you know, as competitors, it's easy for us to sit back and say, well, I would do this better, or I would do that better, or if it was my show, I would do it this way. And you probably felt that way as a competitor. But as a promoter, what would you say to competitors to help them understand, you know, everything that goes into, or what promoting a show is really all about?
Yeah, it's a great, you know, it's a great question. I mean, one thing I didn't do was I never really sought advice from anyone, and maybe that's me being bullheaded, or maybe that was me just thinking that I could do what I kind of wanted to do. But one of the things I would offer is, you know, first of all, compete a lot, or at least go to a lot of shows, go to different shows. You know, NGA, NBF, WNBF, you know, just see how they're ran. And then, you know, if you go to a show you really liked and it seemed like it was ran really well and stuff, start talking to the promoter and ask them questions and how things go and what do you have to do and all those kind of things. Because I'll tell you, there is a tremendous amount that has to happen behind the scenes to run a show. I mean, there are a lot of things that I, you know, when I started getting it, when I thought I'm going to do this, there are so many things that I just never even thought of. You know,
like what would be an example of some of the things that just didn't even cross your mind?
Well, there's a ton of stuff that you have to do on the back end, you know, that you just don't think about. You know, first of all, you think, well, I've got to get first and foremost, you have to find a venue. That proved to be a huge challenge in Des Moines, because even though we have a lot of great schools and auditoriums and stuff, as soon as you tell them you want to do a bodybuilding show, they're done talking to you. Because they spend all this money on these beautiful auditoriums, and they don't want people coming in there with oil and tanning products and all this kind of stuff. And so I got lucky enough to find the one at the Urban Performing Arts Center, and that's a phenomenal facility, and they've been really awesome to work with over the last 5 years. But that's your first challenge, and auditoriums cost a tremendous amount of money. You know, I think a lot of people think that, you know, I want to promote shows because I want to make all this money. I'll tell you, if you're getting into promoting to make money, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. I've been promoting the Titan Classic for 5 years, and I actually only made a profit one time.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and every other year I've ended up losing money and writing and paying out of my own pocket. And so it just, which is fine to some extent. I mean, it's not like lots of money, but it's, but you know, you don't get in it to make, and even if you make money, you know, it's like the one year I made $500, and you know, I'll tell you, $500 might sound like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money to some people, but when you cross-reference $500 for over 4 months worth of work and how many hours I spend preparing the show and doing all the things, I probably got paid like $1 an hour. So, you know, that's not a lot of money.
It's a labor of love. No, it's a labor of love. It's a labor of love
auditoriums
for sure.
Auditoriums cost a lot of money. I mean, you know, for that day, for that auditorium, you know, it cost me almost $2,500 for that day. You know, that's 20, you know, and then I spend, you know, one of the things that I decided as a promoter I really wanted to do was I always wanted to give away great awards, you know, and so like this year I spent $2,800 on the trophies. Now you have to pay a sanction fee to the organization. You have to buy insurance for the auditorium in order to hold your event there. That's something I never realized you had to do. You know, you have to get a polygrapher, so you have to pay him to drive over from Quad Cities or wherever, pay for his hotel rooms and, you know, and all that stuff, the mileage to get him there. You have to, you know, there's tons of things that you have to do. You have to be very organized. My show is in June every year, and probably starting in March, I will field 5 to 10 emails every single day from competitors asking me things, you know, and from just, you know, when people are on diet brand and they ask you just these questions, you're like, are you kidding me? Really? But or sometimes really great questions, you know, but so it takes a tremendous amount of time. I don't want to sound real negative, because I'm not. I love doing it.
Flash in the pan type thing. You don't just wake up and say, hey, I'm going to do a show. I mean,
it takes a lot of work. Yeah, it takes a lot of work, a lot of organization, and, you know, and then you've got to find your judges, and you got to get them to come over, and that's not an easy thing to do, too. Like, I heard Ryan at the end, you know, talking about the judges and how it seems like the judges are, you know, similar everywhere you go, and that is true to some extent, because one, it is what Ryan said is true about it is getting harder and harder to judge these events because of all the categories like physique and everything that's added in now, and to be, you know, it used to be men's and women's bodybuilding, and that was basically it, and now there's so many more things, so judges have to be very educated on all different kinds of things. But it's not only that, it's also the fact that, you know, these judges have to give up their whole weekend, and they get paid to do it. You know, it's strict volunteer. And so that's, you know, that's a lot of time, and that's a lot to ask for people, you know,
sure,
to say, hey,
definitely,
don't give up your entire Friday and your Saturday to just sit at a table and judge people. So that's why I always tell people, make sure that if you know people that judge and stuff, make sure you let them know how much you appreciate them, because without these people that are constantly volunteering their time, this sport wouldn't even exist.
Yep. And you know, that is a great point, you know, because it's easy, especially being a competitor, I understand this, it's easy to be focused on yourself and what you are bringing to the competition and not what everybody else is bringing to the competition. And when you only look at it from that perspective, it is easy to get critical about things. And granted, to be honest, sometimes there are some things that people need to be critical of if they're just not what they should be to be, an A-game type of competition. But, you know, there are a lot of people volunteering their time, dedicating hours, in order for the athletes to get on stage and have their chance to compete and perform. So, I mean, that is an excellent point. And with that being said, you know, I think it does take a certain kind of person to really be able to pull off a good show. Other than being organized, because that's something that you and Ryan have really driven home, what other personality characteristics do you think make a really good promoter?
You have to be very patient, which is not my strongest virtue, but I've taught myself to be more patient. You have to be pretty understanding. You have to really be a people person, because, you know, the one thing that you do have to remember as a promoter, as we just, you know, we always want the competitors to appreciate the judges and stuff like that, and it's great if they do, but we also have to appreciate the competitors. You know, these are the people that have, you know, I'm a competitor. I know what it takes to get on stage. know how hard you have to work to get on stage. And, you know, and a lot of people get on stage for different reasons. Some people get on stage because they lost 200 pounds and they always wanted to do it. They don't even care about winning. And that's great. Yep. Other people get on stage, that people like me, that every time I compete, I go to win. That's the only reason I'm going. And, you know, and so, you know, there are different levels and different motives, but you have to make sure that you appreciate those people. And so you have to be willing to listen. You have to be willing to, you know, have an idea of how you want to structure something, but also be, you know, willing to take criticism. I always ask all competitors that come and compete at my show over the last 5 years, I always ask them, you know, what did you like? What didn't you like? You know, what can I do differently? Because ultimately at the end of the day, you know, it is about the competition and not really anything else. It's about giving these people their chance to showcase what they've done. And so, which is one of the reasons why when I started promoting, I thought to myself, you know what, as a competitor, when I competed over all these 15 years that I've competed, 15 to 20 years, what do I love about competing and what do I hate? And to me, and the reason I run my show the way I run it and not, you know, saying anybody else who runs the show differently is it's bad. It's just, this is the way I do it. So one reason that I wanted to run the one show format, and one of the reasons I started that 5 years ago, and there's a lot of shows around the country that are starting to go to that. And I was really one of the first shows in the whole country to do it. And the reason I did it is because
I
thought,
because I like it.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that it really matters. I don't think people follow, but you know, in anything, in any environment, in any world, in any whatever activity or sport or whatever, it always takes one person, you know, to step out of that box, you know, that just somebody to say, you know what, everyone does it this way and why? And, you know, one of the answers I hate more than anything in bodybuilding or in my job, my normal everyday job, is when someone says, well, this is the way we've always done it. Well, so what? You know, just because you've always done it like that doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean that's the best way. You know, got to be willing to take a chance. And so, you know, Brian Ullstrom and I, when we started running that show, I just said, you know, one of the things that I hate more than anything is that long, extremely long day. And sometimes that day is unavoidable to some extent. You know, depending on how many people you get competing in a show and all those kind of things. But there are little things as a promoter that you can do to limit that. You know, one is always make sure that I start on time. Always start on time. You know, if someone says, that's the thing too, you got to remember, as a promoter, you got to remember that you are not the most important person that day. You are probably the least important person that day. You know, everyone, the promoters like to walk around and be like, well, I'm the promoter. Well, yeah, but who cares? You know, no one's there to see you. You know, there's not 250 people buying tickets to the show to see you. No one cares who you are. You know, and so it's not about you. It's about them, and it's about making sure that, you know, their time is valued. Oh, sorry, my dog's barking.
Okay.
It's for time and value. So I've always been like, you know, nothing makes me crazier than when you go compete at a show and the promoter's like, hey, we're going to have a competitor meeting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. And you show up at 8 o'clock and they stand around and they're working on the stage until 9:15 and you're just sitting there, you know, and I'm like, that makes me crazy, you know, because I'm like, I could have slept another hour. So I've always said, I'm going to start on time, and we always start on time. And you know, you've competed in my show. Anyone that's competed in my show, when I say we're going to have a meeting at noon, that meeting starts at noon. That's all there is to it. If you're not there, then you're going to have some issues. And when I say prejudging starts at 1, we're starting at 1. I mean, we're not starting at 1:05, we're not starting at 15, we're starting at 1 o'clock. And so that's the one thing, too, is make sure you value other people's time. Value the competitor's time, value the judge's time, value, you know, the audience's time, because really, too, that's another whole group. And talked about the audience is, helps make these things roll too. I mean, if we don't sell the tickets, if I don't sell the tickets, this thing, and if people don't come pay money to come watch these people, then I can't put on a show. I can't afford to pay for the auditorium without people coming to watch. You know, and every promoter's in that same position. You know, people think the promoters, you know, make all this money off these ticket sales. The reason we have to sell tickets at the price we have to sell them at is because we have to pay all these other people in order to run the show. And otherwise, you know, unless you're rich and you're willing to just write a $5,000 check every year that you put a show on, then you've got to find a way to do that, you know?
Exactly.
Sponsorships are, yeah, sponsorships aren't easy to get anymore. You know, companies don't give away their money as easily as they used to, and it's hard to get companies to, I'm sure most promoters would attest that, it's really hard to get companies to help sponsor bodybuilding events. Because, you know, they don't really understand the sport and stuff like that. So that makes it tougher. But so, yeah, value people's time. And then, you know, try to structure your show to make it as efficient as possible. You know, last 3 years, you know, we've started our show prejudging at 1 o'clock. And the latest my show has gone in the last year is 6:45. And we're done. Out the door, people are done. And we can go fast. We don't rip people off. I mean, I would say that at times we have people on stage longer than everybody else. But we do some things that a lot of people don't do. You know, I let bodybuilders, one thing that I do that cuts a tremendous amount of time out of the show and also values the competitors' time is, you know, I let bodybuilders choose whether they want to do a routine or not.
Sure.
You know, routines aren't judged. No one judges routines. There's not a sanction that judges routines. They've never been judged. They're for entertainment only. And there's nothing wrong with the routine. I don't mind them, but a lot of bodybuilders hate doing them. They're there to do the mandatory poses, and that's what they really want to focus on. And so, you know, if bodybuilders want to do a routine, we let them go out on stage and entertain the heck out of people. And if they don't, then that's fine, you know. And that's one of the ways to really make a show go a lot faster and smoother and things like that. So that's, I think those are the tricks that you really need. You need to be willing to listen. You need to be able to make changes, you know, if you need to make changes, and to make sure you value everybody's time and don't make it about yourself, make it about everybody else.
Yep, exactly. Well, I mean, and I think those are all great tips, aside from the fact that I love the bodybuilding performances, but I totally understand the time savings and also the nerves associated with having to perform if you don't feel like that's really, really your forte. So we're nearing the end of our time here, but before we do, I would like your perspective on how much do you think well-run competitions are contributing to the growth of the sport?
Well, I would hope well-run competitions are contributing tons to the growth of the sport. In my opinion, I don't know if it's so much the shows that aren't ran well or anything like that, as I think it's gotten the natural side, and I kind of touched on this earlier, I think it's gotten to the point where there's too many sanctions out there right now, and there's choice is good. There's nothing wrong with having options. But the problem that you run into, in my opinion, is, you know, all these sanctions, you know, you have to be a member in order to compete. And mm-hmm. Bodybuilding, fitness, you know, you're a competitor. It's not a cheap sport. You know, it's not a cheap sport. I mean, between the food you have to eat and the supplements you have to take and the entry fees for the shows and then the memberships for the things and, you know, for the sanctions, it can add up to your lie detector tests and all that other stuff, you know, it can add up to a lot. And so if you're a person, you know, there's an NANBF show, and then there's an NGA show, and then there's a DVAC show, and then there's a PNBA show, and they're all fairly close to each other. But you're like, well, man, I'm going to have to pay $50 to get my NGA card, and $50 to get my NANBF card, and $50, you know, to get my PNBA card, and $60 to get my DVAC card, you know, and then I got to pay, you know, on top of the entry fees. I think that has more to do with the the sport and maybe heading in the wrong direction than anything else. You know, poorly run shows is never good. Because, you know, as soon as someone has, you know, usually poorly run shows have a way of weeding themselves out, though, too, because usually if a show's ran really bad and people go to it, they just don't go back, you know, and by the time they don't go back a couple times and they tell a couple other people, then pretty soon the show doesn't have anybody entering and that show just disappears, you know. So, but yeah, I would love it if somehow all these sanctions could come together and find a way to work together. And because I said for years that I think natural bodybuilding would destroy the NPC in popularity if it was just under one roof. Because there's so many more natural athletes. I mean, there's probably, I don't even know, I'd just be ballparking, but I guess there's 10 times the amount of natural athletes that are competing as there are that compete in the NPC. And, but they're one thing. And so then they have the big events and, you know.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, because you would never tell it by the competitions.
Yeah. Yep, and you can have your big events when you only have one thing. Like, you know, the NGA has the Pro Universe, the DFAC has the World Finals in Miami, and the PNBA has the Natural Olympia, you know, and the NAMBF has the Yorton Cup. Those are all kind of the top shows in each sanction. But how much bigger would each of those shows be if they were all one sanction? You know, if the Yorton Cup and, you know, the Pro Universe were qualifiers for the Olympia, you know, and so on and so forth. Then you get to the end of the year, like the NBC has the Mr. Olympia and the Arnold, and those are the two top shows that they do, and everybody basically competes all year round to get to those two shows. And if the natural side had something like that, it would be huge. It would just be huge.
Well, you definitely have given us a lot to think about. I don't know what the answer is there, but like you said, it only takes one person to start a conversation, right?
Yep.
So before we totally run out of time, talk to me about the Titan Classic. What dates are we looking at in 2016?
I think it's June. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I want to say it's June 26th. It's always that third weekend of June. This year it was the 27th, so I think next year is the 26th. It'll be in Urbandale. I haven't changed the website yet. But the website, you can always go to the website anytime. It's up and running all year round. It's just ngatitanclassic.com. It's got all my contact info in there. You can also just go to nationalgym.com and the show's on there too. That's a great website to go to for the NGA because they list all their shows, amateur and pro shows, throughout the whole year on that site. It'll be June 26th, I believe. We, like I said before, we run a one show format. So, you know, we usually start later in the day, you know, we usually have a competitors meeting around noon. Pre-judging starts at 1:00. Pre-judging will last a couple hours, two and a half hours. We take about an hour break, let the judges tally their cards, come right back to the finals and usually out the door by 7:00. We have a great, the other thing I like about the way I do my show too is, you know, everybody has after parties and stuff like that, but a lot of these shows that, you know, they don't get over till 10:30, 11:00, 11:30, 12:00, you know, the after party is usually pretty dead because everybody's left. The nice thing about my show is when we end at 7:00, I mean, everybody goes to the after party. The judges go, all the competitors go because it's 7:00, you know, and it's
And that is so critical, and I hate to be cutting you off, but we're about to lose our airtime. So I just want to say, folks out there, we've had a lot of knowledge to digest today. I would definitely like to thank Jason Kyman for sharing his time with us and his background perspective. He's given us a lot to think about. Thanks to Ryan Irwin. And just a last recap, if you're looking for a good starter show, check out the Cedar Rapids show this October 25th. Be looking for the NutriSport Natural May 14th, and then the Titan Classic. June 25th, 26th, whatever that date is on that weekend. This is Desiree with P4P. Jason Kyman, your body is a temple, so let's build it. Thanks, Jason. We'll be talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks.